Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
So what do you think? What do you think? Are you happy that you have Nick Foles now? Is he the starter?
No.
I don't even know.
He's what's that?
Is he the official starter now?
Yeah, he. They benched when they benched Trubisky. They made it clear that Foles was the guy going forward, and that the Trubisky experiment was done. It's just one of those things. Like one of the radio guys that I listen to out of Illinois, I think he put it best. Nick Foles isn't really going to win you like a Super Bowl, probably the floors and ceilings. I mean, he won a Super Bowl for the Eagles. He had one magical run. Like, let's be real. Like, everybody glorifies like his one magical run, but the guy was like, the floor is higher. With Nick Foles than it was with Trubisky, and the ceilings are about the same. The big difference is that Foles, like, isn't stupid. Like, he's not gonna make the mistake that loses games for you the way that Trubisky has been. Like, Trubisky has regressed in 3 years and can't read it. The offense has been so simplified for him that they were running like 10 plays.
Is Trubisky going to end up being like Tannehill, though? Like, is he going to go like to Tampa Bay in 2 years and start just winning games?
I mean, if he does, I'd still have no regrets because he was atrocious.
I mean, and think about what they gave for a 1 year starter from UNC. Like, it's just insane.
Well, and that 12-4 season was on the strength of a defense. You know what I mean? Oh, like a disruptive defense that isn't the same either. Like, people are putting way too much
up for that guy.
What's that?
They traded up for that guy, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. I remember exactly where I was when I saw, because it was Thursday, so I was bowling. And even though the rumors were out there, I feared they weren't true. And unfortunately, it was Adam Schefter, not Dave Meltzer reporting, and therefore it was true.
My team took Daniel Jones, and he is, you know, tank for Trevor.
Dude.
He actually didn't look terrible against Dallas, but
do you guys play the Jets this year?
I don't think we do, but we play Washington this week, so that's going to be.
Because, God, I would actually sit down and watch the Jets and the Giants because somebody's got to win, right?
It's funny. We were laughing because me and my son were watching the Giants and Dallas, and we were like, this is like the best game of the week so far. And it's right. You know, and of course, Dak gets hurt, which was terrible. And so much, but yeah, dude, it was crazy. Anyway, this is like 3 minutes of the opening of the show now.
Oh, Phoenix!
Hey, yo.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
I'd actually like to take this opportunity to wish
Greg DeMarco Show
the best in all his future endeavors.
Oh,
What is up? It is yet another Tuesday night, Tuesday, October the 13th, week 179 of COVID-19. What week is it? Do we know what week it is? Is there a counter somewhere, Patrick O'Dowd?
There is, but I have no idea because everybody started at different times.
That's true. Like for me, it was, and for me, it was that basically that Friday in March that they sent us home from work, and we're like, "Yep, we're working from home now." And then we just never went back.
Literally, right after I got back from our hangout in Vegas, like was when like things started getting for reals out here.
Funny because I went back to Vegas to like a week and a half later. And was sick during that time and may have had it. Like you never know. So yeah, who knows?
Funny thing. I'm back in the office.
Yeah.
Just for a couple weeks anyway, but right. Back in the office because we're planning to, like every other school, we're closing earlier than normal and we're making everybody move out. So now we have to plan for that. And
oh man, it's crazy.
All right. Good times.
Well, this is the Greg DeMarco Show, which means my name is Greg DeMarco. The Greg DeMarco Show is brought to you as part of the ChairShot Radio Network, which you can find at a very special place called thechairshot.com.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Once again, that very special place is called thechairshot.com.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
You can follow the website at ChairShot Media. You can follow me on all of your forms of social media at ChairShot Greg. This show is also streaming on iTunes, Spotify, iHeart, Google Podcasts, and so many more. So like, subscribe, leave us a 5-star review. And if you like the show, go tell a friend so they can listen and enjoy it too. Especially this week, it's going to be a lot of fun. Patrick O'Dowd has no idea what we're talking about today. We'll get there. We'll get there here in a moment. Speaking of Patrick O'Dowd, you heard his voice earlier as we're talking some football and some COVID. Because how can you not talk COVID these days? It's like ignoring the fact, you know, if a nuclear war was going on and we didn't talk about it, it'd be weird. Of course, we might not be podcasting. We might be hiding under a table or something. I don't know. We're building a bunker.
Duck and cover.
Right. Building an ark. I don't know. But he is on the Twitter at Wrestling Realist. That's WrestlingRealist. You might notice the lack of a female voice this week. Miranda Morales is off this week due to a prior family engagement, but you can still follow her on Instagram, not on Twitter, because she's a Twitterless heroine, at the hashtag Miranda. Patrick O'Dowd. You missed last week's show, of course. You were on your thing. So at the beginning of the show, you mentioned bowling. We haven't talked. Is that back? Is that not back? What's the status of bowling?
Bowling's back. It almost wasn't back for me. I almost decided not to. Basically, it was
really.
Oddly enough, not for the reason that most people would think. If I was just a regular bowler in the league, I would probably have not had a problem going back, but my role in the league,
right,
I collect everybody's scorecards at the end of the day. I collect money from everybody. So all these hands touching shit,
right,
coming, and I have to like handle it all. And so I bring like my own thing of hand sanitizer, and it's no shortage of vanity, but my league is such that nobody really wants the job that I do. So I had legitimate concerns about the league continuing if I didn't stay on and keep doing it. So I stayed on, and it's been different. The league's about half the size, and most leagues right now, because they're going on, are about half the size as people hopped out, and that the bowling alleys are doing a lot of like safety measures and stuff that you would expect and hope for. Like you're not on top of each other. You have to wear a mask until you're on the approach. Hand sanitizer everywhere. So they're trying, and it's going okay so far. I haven't had anybody report that they are sick. And I personally have, you know, like between this and being on a campus with students, haven't had anything happen. So the precautions seem to be going okay, and hopefully it keeps going like that.
Now, and maybe this is my naivete, I don't know. Well, does the mask really inhibit a bowler that much?
What do you mean by inhibit?
Like, couldn't you roll the ball with the mask on? I mean, really.
And people do. Like, okay. Some people do. It's definitely like a comfort and a preference That's thing. True. And since nobody else is up on the approach, like when you throw because of etiquette, like you could pull the mask down. I personally, like, it's funny because that's one of the few times I don't wear a mask is when mm-hmm. I'm on the approach throwing a ball, but like two of my teammates, they'll keep it on.
Yeah, personal preference. And like you said, I think it's safe. Obviously you're doing well and okay right. there. And so, yeah, that's a good thing. So excellent. Well, I'm glad to hear the bowling is still happening.
It's a thing, you know yeah. what I mean? It's kind of like you and your working out, like,
except I've only been doing it since May. You've been bowling for like a decade.
True, but you still, like, you can't deny that you're working out and your CrossFit stuff and not just the getting in shape and like doing all that, but it is a nice little outlet for you. Like, absolutely. It's something that you do and you enjoy. And when that was taken away from you, I remember the crazy. Greg DeMarco of, they closed the fucking gym.
I was so mad. And it was only a day, right? Then the gym opened back up, but we were sneaking in. That's when we were Fight Club protocol, which was a lot of fun. Like, you felt like you were breaking the law, but still doing it. Like, it literally felt like you were going to some underground gym.
Right.
Like, it was a blast. Now it's they tore down the middle wall of the gym. It's like it's in a warehouse complex, and so it was two bays. I guess, I don't know. They tore down the middle wall and the place looks completely different now. It's crazy. I need to take some pictures, but I haven't. They just did it over the weekend.
Yeah, you don't take pictures?
No, I take pictures. I take more pictures.
I mean, other than pictures of yourself, I guess. You know, right, like,
exactly.
How many pictures of Greg DeMarco do I have on my phone of Greg brushing his teeth and taking a picture of himself?
There's only two of the teeth brushing ones.
It's the Greg DeMarco special.
It is. Someone asked me to explain the pose. The toothbrushing is not supposed to be part of the pose, but it just lends itself to it. Yeah, it's been, I don't know. It comes from
years. Sorry, you're right-handed. My bad.
No, I'm left-handed.
Really? Yeah. I didn't know that.
You knew that.
Wow. Did I?
You knew that.
All right. Yeah, I'm left-handed. I've only been friends for over a decade. Right? I should know that.
We're closer to two than one decade at this point.
Get the fuck out of town. As I look at my old UConn
right?
swag, the one piece of apparel that was not like work mm-hmm. Related that I still wanted a work function.
I still have a like UConn at a raffle shirt and a UConn t-shirt, like a long sleeve t-shirt hanging up in my closet. I don't ever wear them. And I think a long sleeve t-shirt too. I don't know. I got to look. But see, now all these things fit again. So I got to try.
Oh, look at you. Look at you, like, low key, little humble brag.
Yeah. No, no. A few years ago.
You normally brag. So, like,
right, exactly.
Humble brag. Like, what's humble about it?
Now they're just, now it's like actual accomplishments. So it's more fun that way. A couple years ago, I was going to post this. I never posted it though. Maybe like 3-4 years ago, I bought two shirts on clearance at Target. They were larges. And I was like, by the end of the year, I'm going to wear these shirts. And of course I didn't by the end of the year, and I didn't forever. Well, I can now wear the shirts, and actually wore the shirts when my wife and I went away a couple weekends ago. So.
Oh, good for yeah. you.
I don't know if I can do a lot of larges. It's now they make things smaller and their shoulders.
I was talking about this with the missus, the shoulders and the sleeves. Like, I don't know what it is now with t-shirts. Cause you know how I don't like yeah. sleeves, and they're like, it's all like high up on the uh-huh. bicep and like,
it's the vanity that you've talked about before. Yeah.
The O'Dowd doesn't really take people to the gun show.
No.
Like, the guns.
I've got to that point, but I actually prefer, I'm picky too. I actually prefer the more traditional length sleeve on a t-shirt than
right.
I don't like the high sleeves. Sometimes I'll put on a shirt and I'll feel like it's a women's shirt, like with the way the sleeves are cut. And that's not me. So, but you know, it is what it is, but you know, humble brags aside, that is, you know, yeah, you brought the CrossFit up and you know, not to open that Pandora's box. Cause the one thing I've learned is that people that go to CrossFit love to talk about CrossFit, and I'm slowly
sure
becoming
do.
The CrossFit person. Not even slowly. I've become one of them.
It's like becoming.
Yes. One of us. Like, as soon as I showed up, they started chanting. So
damn pod person.
Someone actually was telling me that it's a cult for them. Like, it's a cult they're okay saying they're a part of. So,
right.
It's, you know, if they make me drink something I don't want to drink and then no one else leaves the building, I probably won't do that. But then I'll have to find a new CrossFit gym. But That's your informal update on bowling and CrossFit from Greg DeMarco and Patrick O'Dowd. We don't have Miranda here to sell t-shirts, man. Like, what am I?
We don't. I mean,
I should make you do it. You do it for Bandwagon Nerds, right?
You want me to send people over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot
to
talk about all the fine t-shirts that people can buy, including Jesus Did the Job, hashtag Save Tag Team Wrestling, the Platt Belaz 2020 campaign shirt, buy the shirt but don't vote for them, all of the plethora of various chairshot.com swag that you can get at prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. You can even get the Bandwagon Nerds shirt. You can get a Winner Is You. There's about a dozen Greg DeMarco related shirts because they're all thechairshot.com. Plus the Everybody Hates Greg shirt. But I also consider the chairshot.com shirts Greg DeMarco shirts. Okay. They're yours too. And not only that, you can get them in either your standard t-shirt style at around $20 or so, but if you're feeling fancy, you can throw a couple more dollars that way and go soft style and just feel a little bit extra with that soft style shirt. I know that's the preferred style of the queen of soft style herself, Miranda Morales. Greg DeMarco, I do believe you like the soft style as well. I am what is known as a cheap bastard, and so my one shirt is of the hashtag Save Tag Team Wrestling variety. That's right, kids. I don't even have the shirt to my own show. I didn't buy that shirt yet.
You don't.
But I have hashtag Save Tag. I know, right? But I do have hashtag Save Tag Team Wrestling, which is probably my number two shirt anyway.
Yeah.
But I went standard style. So get over there, support thechairshot.com, support all these awesome podcasts. And once again, that's prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Use your head and support Chairshot Radio Network.
Well done, Patrick O'Dowd. Well done. I like it.
I do it on Bandwagon Nerds, you know.
You do? Oh, I know. I listen to Bandwagon Nerds, or I was listening to it. It's really fun. So this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds, you talk about how there's not much on the agenda. Show is over 2 hours long. You know, there's not much on the agenda.
Most of that is the boys.
And of course, you decided to go, you know, party of five again and have five people on there to talk about the boys.
That was the plan. I intended that show.
No one listens to me when I tell them what not to do. And they just say, fuck it, let's have. You've been on this show when we've had too many people. Like, you've lived it. You know when too much is too much.
Oh, I thoroughly enjoyed our 7-point breakdown of the boys episode.
I don't even know
8.
What point I'm on currently, to be honest with you.
Which is unfair because you watched the show.
You're still
on season one, right?
But I haven't even started it. No, the show that I. But I can tell you, I am 54 minutes and 55 seconds into an hour and 10 minute or 2 hour and 10 minute broadcast. So
hey, you're almost to the commercial break.
There we go.
That's
a great segue, Patrick O'Dowd.
I'm here for you.
Brilliant, brilliant segue.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, folks. PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
Are you looking for the newest and hottest in the world of pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 6,000 hours of the best events from over 150 of your favorite promotions from 20 different countries around the globe. Brands like Progress Wrestling, Evolve Wrestling, Combat Zone, Defy, PCW Ultra, PWX, Over the Top, Shine, and hundreds of others with fresh content added every day for only $5.99 per month. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
That's over 150 of your favorite promotions found exclusively at powerslam.tv. So go to powerslam.tv and you'll get a free week. But if you use the promo code CHAIRSHOT, you will get a free month. Now, a month is only $6, but why not try it out and see if you like it first and do it on us. Go to powerslam.tv, promo code CHAIRSHOT, get your free month. Again, that's powerslam.tv, promo code CHAIRSHOT.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
So on last week's program that Patrick wasn't a part of, we were lucky enough to interview Maggie Makowitz, one of the founders, co-founder of Not Dead, Can't Quit, NDCQ.com. Just want to remind everybody, because I have my promo code there, head on over to NDCQ.com. Save 30% on your order. 30%. It's the only one. Only way you can save that much there. Whenever they run a sale, it's usually 20%. You can save 30% using the promo code DeMarco. I don't even get anything for it, okay? They just set it up because we're trying to promote the brand and do all that. There's going to be more stuff to come. Interview did very well. Like, a lot of people listened to it, and we're going to do more with it with them. But definitely go check that out. Learn about that. Hear kind of a little bit of a different side of myself, of Miranda Morales. And, of course, Maddie Makowitz. Hear all about her late husband, Mac Makowitz, kind of a famous dude. Yeah, lots of fun and definitely appreciative of that. So go and check it out and have a lot of fun that way as well. So Patrick, I talked about it with you, texted you today and said I was going to have a topic for the show. I was excited about it. And what did, how did I put it to you? I can't even remember what I, how I said
you,
it.
You were like, I'm not sure if I am going to tell you or just surprise you.
Right. I said, it's a wrestling topic.
You were like, I want to.
It's a wrestling topic, but I guarantee you,
right,
it's one you can discuss with zero advance notice. So here's what I want to do, Patrick O'Dowd. I want to see if you can figure out what it is. So I want to kind of see if you're able to guess.
You're going to quiz me again. You know how good I am at quizzes.
Oh, it's not the we're not doing a game show, so you don't have to worry about that. But let's see if you can figure out the topic. So we'll intro music it, and then we'll let you take some guesses. So you know it's a wrestling topic. You know it's one you can talk about at the drop of a hat. No preparation needed, no anything. So I'll give you three guesses. What do you think we're talking about today?
Well, even though I think it's probably not correct, the number one would be something to do with tag team wrestling. Yeah, see, I knew that was too obvious. No, it's not that. I was like, I'm not even going to waste a guess on that one.
Okay.
So given my interest, it's probably something old school, I would hope, in the neighborhood of, say, either the AWA or 80s WWF. Not in the ballpark there. Is it Roman Reigns? Because that'd be my other one.
No, but that's actually Roman a great... Reigns. That would have been a great one to do, to be honest with you, like that. We could have definitely done the big dog.
Here comes the big dog. The big dog, Roman Reigns. The big dog. And we kick off Monday Night Raw live tonight in Phoenix, Arizona with the big dog.
So three guesses, none of which you picked up on. But so I'm going to intro it for you tonight. The topic that I want to, because you know, when Miranda wasn't going to be here, I was like, what can we talk about that she would not want to partake in? Because I have this topic I want to talk about. I tabled it for last week. Like, I really want you to be part of it. I really want her. It's a perfect three of us topic to talk about. We talked about the women's championships on her show. So I talked about, we're going to talk about the men's championships on this one. Not ready yet. So I want to do it next week when all three of us are hopefully together. So I came up with something else that you and I are the perfect people to talk about here this week on this program. Patrick O'Dowd, we are going to go back in time and talk about what is affectionately known as the greatest night in the history of our sport.
Oh, really?
Which, of course, is what, Patrick O'Dowd?
That's Final Battle, ROH's Final Battle 2005.
ROH Final Battle 2005.
I'm gonna bring up the card just so that I have it up.
You don't even need it. I got it. I really want you to be able to go completely off the old cuff there and have some fun. So it was a Saturday.
You just rewatched this not too long ago.
I'm sure you did. That's the thing. Like, you've seen this show more than anyone on planet Earth. So I know that this is a topic you can talk about at the drop of a hat, and that's why I wanted to do that. It was Saturday night, December 17th, 2005, at the Inman Sports Complex in Edison, New Jersey.
Edison, New Jersey.
Greg DeMarco, Patrick O'Dowd, and like 1,100 of our closest friends. This was a huge card and a huge group of people. And just
wasn't it? It was one of the first times they were at that.
It was
complex,
the first
right?
time they were at Edison.
Right.
It was because yeah, and it became kind
was
of.
Is that
a
one of the? Did
them.
We do one of the White Castle trips on that?
Probably, maybe, because that was a one-nighter. Like, we didn't stay overnight. We went and drove home.
Right.
That wasn't the greatest weekend in the history of our sport. That's different. That was in May of that year before I moved. So this was one show. We drove back in Edison, New Jersey. May have been a White Castle trip. May have been a stop at McDonald's on the New Jersey Turnpike and not talk to wrestlers trip. I can't remember. So
no, we definitely – no, that was, like, later. Because I just think, speaking of us talking about the University of Connecticut, I remember that night because UConn was like moving out and closing, and you and I like, fuck it, we're going anyway.
Wait again.
And blew it off.
Did we get permission or did we just go? I can't remember.
For those of you, yes, your boss was like, who cares? If I distinctly remember, and my boss is still really close with your supervisor at the time. And so they just kind of did whatever that person did. But for those of you who have ever been around or know anything about like myself and Greg, I'm the like the paranoid rules guy. So like the whole trip, I'm like, should we really be doing this? Like, oh gosh, I can't believe we're doing this. And then like, but I didn't care. Like I still went, but like the whole time I felt like, what if we get caught? Like, what's going to happen? And we didn't get caught. And nobody cared. So, but it was a law. I remember that drive back because we had to work bright and early the next day. And that next day was rough.
Yep.
It was rough.
But we did it. But we did.
We did
it.
Do
we
it.
It happened. And we definitely had a great time there. That was back before Ring of Honor had to worry about taping television, had to worry about any of that stuff. Like, they just do shows. They didn't even do double shots all the time. This was not a double shot. It was one off. And we, of course, we decided to partake in it and made that show, made that trip. And of course, it became known affectionately as the greatest night in the history of our sport. Of course, that's a takeoff of Tony Schiavone. Tony Schiavone not there as far as we know, but definitely a grand old time had by all at Ring of Honor Final Battle 2005. So we are going to go down the card and talk about it a little bit and just have some fun with it and kind of go over what we did. So the opener, Patrick O'Dowd. And this is just, it's just seeing these matches brings back memories. The first guy out, Prince Nana managing Jimmy Rave. Going to the ring to go one-on-one with Milano Collection AT. Now, a lot of people listening to this probably have no idea who that is. They probably do, but may not remember. Explain Milano Collection AT to the folks.
I mean, Milano Collection AT was he was a fashion model with his dog that he used to walk down to the ring.
His invisible dog.
From Italy, from Milan, Italy. Mm-hmm. Though he didn't really look very Italian. And I remember he was at the first ever show that we went to. He was at Survival of the Fittest, mm-hmm. which was the first ROH show I ever attended for that year.
Tied
it wasn't
Samoa
your
Joe
first ROH show. It was my first. What's that?
And tied Samoa Joe up like a pretzel.
And yeah, and he tied. Well, and that was his big thing, is that he was very creative in the way that he used the ring ropes to tie up at the time it was Samoa Joe. And it became his spots, like his spots is getting his shit in. But where he would basically tie up a wrestler mm-hmm. into the ropes, and not like in the corner, like in the ropes in the middle, and it would like do a drop kick on them, and that would be how they would release. And he was very much like this grounded style of wrestler that like got over huge with the crowd right away. I remember I totally bought it. It's like that was my first impression of ROH ever. And so he was like the opener guy for about 3 or 4 months there, where that was where he tended to work. And he was doing the opener work this time with Jimmy Rave, who this is where we got a good look at Jimmy Rave's arm, if I do recall.
Yeah.
This is one of the times where he wung some toilet paper back.
Yeah.
And he had an arm. He could have been a quarterback.
The whole Jimmy Rave, so And we joke about Jimmy Rave now because I never still haven't right. received the things that were ordered almost a year ago. But I mean, he was talk about over as a heel. Oh my
God. Oh, goodness. He had heat.
People like the whole toilet paper gimmick was just amazing. Like people would just chuck. And I mean, it was especially this show in particular, like the amount of toilet paper.
Yeah, it was a flood. It was again, so
this
much.
This is probably the biggest ROH crowd you and I have ever been a part of. And right. they just chucked it. And yeah, he was throwing it back at people and just really just
and
so
not
good.
Gently people.
Like, of course not. Like, no, he like nailed a guy. I mean, just literally.
You could hear the pop yeah. as he hit folks. Like it was crazy. And I remember the match was okay. Like it wasn't Milano's best outing that I saw. Actually, I think his first one with Joe was probably right. was probably way better. But it really wasn't about that at that point because Jimmy Rave, it was about keeping Jimmy Rave's heat
yeah.
and keeping him moving forward because he was nuclear.
He was
when it came to like just how much the crowd loved to hate him. And oh, him and with Nana was just a perfect guy for him to speak for.
Jimmy Rave to me, and I hate to say this because that, you know, another person who's been on the show and of course ascended to the mountaintop in Ring of Honor. But to me, he would be like if Ring of Honor put titles on people in 2005, 2006, the way they do now, he would have had a Matt Taven like world title run is what he would
right.
have had. Like he
right,
was
right.
Matt Taven before Matt Taven was Matt Taven. And Jimmy Rave, of course, you know, never made it to, I mean, he made it to TNA and he was part of the Rocket Rave Infection and all that stuff. But he was, you know, career just cut short by injury and substance abuse and has turned that around professionally and done just fine. But it's definitely, you know, just such a great opening match. A good 12-minute affair.
Great scowl.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like perfect heel. Perfect heel. And just the pairing with him being the crown jewel of the embassy, being with Prince Nana, like it just worked. You wouldn't think it would work, but it just worked. And
right,
Nana,
right.
again, another guy who just never got his due, would never got his real opportunity. Like Prince Nana to me should be a manager in Impact Wrestling or AEW or even WWE. Like he should have made it and just, I don't know if he wanted to or not, but yeah, definitely one hell of a performer. Match number two on the card was Colt Cabana going one-on-one with Azrael.
Azrael
and, was like, I'm trying to think of a good comparison. Like maybe like Apollo Crews level on the card.
No,
not even.
Azrael was on his way out at this point. Like he was definitely on yeah. his downward slope, and because he was part of Lacey's Angels, if I do recall,
he was. I think he was part of what was that faction that Jimmy Rave was in? Not Jimmy Rave. Jay Lethal was in when they first started. Before we really started.
Oh gosh. It was like, yeah, it was like those, it was like a bunch of ravers yeah. though. Like, right.
I can't remember
like,
what the hell they were called now. It'll come to me later, but I think he was part
and
of that.
He, yeah. But by the time we get to Final Battle 2005, like he's just a guy.
I think
on
he might
card.
Have actually already been quote unquote released from the company, but brought back
right.
because he was, again, this wasn't supposed to be Cabana versus Azrael. This was supposed to be Colt Cabana versus Homicide. And
right.
Homicide was injured in his match with Steve Corino leading up to this in
right.
New York that featured Steel Cage Warfare. And I believe that's where it took place. And
right.
and so it was, you know, Azrael was kind of the substitute, which is a little bit of a letdown. Right. You know, we expected the craziness of of Homicide.
But they told a pretty, here's the thing, is the match itself is kind of secondary to the story yeah. they were trying to tell. Because at this point, Colt Cabana is feuding with Homicide, and this is a turn for Colt Cabana into this more serious sort of character. Right. Like everybody knows him as the fun loving guy. And in this whole match, Azrael is like wanting to have fun with Colt Cabana, like, and play along with a lot of his stuff. And he's trying to, and there's this memorable spot where Cabana keeps going into the ropes and Azrael keeps sticking out his leg to trip him.
Yeah.
And Cabana gets mad at him and keeps getting mad at him. Finally, Cabana's like, if you do that one more time, I'm going to slap the piss out of you. And sticks his foot out again. And Cabana paintbrushes right. him, just, and Azrael oversells it, but it was still a really good slap, and it's like, it's serious Cabana.
Yeah, and then of course, and I mean, you know, Cabana does get the victory, as he should, and yep. with a lariat. And then out come Homicide and Ricky Reyes. And Homicide does reveal he's going to be out for 6 months, warns him that after he kills Steve Corino, although he called him Steve Cadito or whatever he
Cadino.
Called him.
Yeah.
Then he's coming after him, stay out of his business or do bad thing, all that stuff. Like, they didn't come to blows, nothing like that. But of course, the best part of it was the Homicide entrance. Like, Homicide's entrance at the time, lights go fully out, you get the Kill Bill sirens, like, you just get, it's everything. And it was just right. such a good setup. And that was,
I just remember that when the sirens would hit, you would, like, you and I would yell, uh-oh.
Yep. Like, you just knew.
Like, uh-oh.
You just knew. Let me see if an ad plays. Hang on. We're going to, there we go. All right, it's enough of that. But yeah, it was just, and we didn't know he was going to be there. He wasn't announced. It wasn't anything. Yeah. So Homicide showed up, and we went to the show in November where Homicide was supposed to wrestle and didn't because of supposedly legal reasons, but because he couldn't leave the state of New York, but yet he showed up later. And Colt Cabana wrestled B-Boy.
Right.
And of course, Homicide came out after that too. And we got the Homicide. So two straight Ring of Honor shows for us. We got two straight Homicide surprise entrances. And they did not come to blows. However, spoiler alert, this would not be the last time we saw Homicide this evening.
That is correct.
But Cabana goes over, little, you know, what, 8 minute match, and that's it.
Yeah, it was a little nothing burger.
I mean, the whole shenanigans afterwards probably took almost the same amount of time. And that's right. What it was all about at this point. This was just to extend that story until we could finally get to it. Match number three was for the Ring of Honor Pure Wrestling Championship. Of course, salient point now is they're bringing that back and they're in the midst of their tournament. And I've been kind of retro reviewing them. I've gotten through two episodes of the Pure Tournament so far, which you can hear over at thechairshot.com. Nigel McGuinness versus Claudio Castagnoli. Nigel McGuinness was the reigning defending undisputed Ring of Honor Pure Wrestling Champion. Claudio Castagnoli, of course, long thinning hair, now better known as the bald-headed Cesaro in WWE. Nigel McGuinness, part of the commentary team for NXT UK, just as he's back over in the UK now. And the story here was that Nigel had been cheating against Claudio in all of the Pure Wrestling Championship matches. So there were two referees for this match. Because, of course, you know, it's like in football, when you have two quarterbacks, you have none. In referees, when you have two, when in wrestling, when you have two referees, you have no clean decision. That's basically what happens.
1,000%. Right.
Of course, the Pure Wrestling rules, you get three rope breaks and you get one warning if you use a closed fist. If you use a second closed fist, it costs you a rope break, a rule they are not using now, by the way. You get a warning and then you get disqualified. They no longer will charge you a rope break for a closed fist, which I liked that rule in the past. At the time, there was also a hard 20 count on the floor. Now all Ring of Honor matches have a 20 count on the floor, so that's also not as important a part of it. Because back then, Ring of Honor, you didn't see disqualifications, you didn't see count outs. And so the Pure Wrestling rules definitely did apply. And of course, once you're out of rope breaks, pinfalls and submission attempts and the ropes are legal and can be utilized. Of course, we were at the Survival of the Fittest show that you mentioned in September of 2005, where BJ Whitmer challenged Nigel McGuinness. And the whole story of that match was what?
Oh, shoot. I don't even remember.
BJ didn't know the rules. BJ would get confused by the rules. Whether or not that was a storyline or just real life, I don't know.
But yeah, who knows? Who knows? Like Randy Savage thinking he should pin Yokozuna in the Royal Rumble.
Yeah. So, of course, they battled for the championship. Two referees, everything.
Yeah. Well, we got to have the privilege of chanting Dusty Finish at the end of the match. For me, I will always remember Nigel. One, it's a damn shame that Nigel McGuinness's career was cut short the way that it was, and his health and his body breaking down the way that it did, and not being able to continue to wrestle, because he really was as good as anybody. And when he was on top of Ring of Honor, so many people just don't know how great he was, because it's now been so long since he was so great. And you can see it in the way that he was the pure champion and the way that they built his rivalry with Daniel Bryan later. I'm sorry, Bryan Danielson in ROH, but
legendary.
You saw it in matches like this one. And I remember the best part about this is Claudio gets the jump early on Nigel with rope breaks. And that's part of the story that's being telling is that Nigel's used up a couple of his rope breaks right away. And when Nigel finally gets a rope break, he turns around to the crowd and he's like, "One for Claudio." And then he gets back to it. And when he gets the second one, he's like, "There's two for Claudio." Like, and it was just him getting back at the crowd and the crowd, you know, wanting to get after him over that heel persona. And again, it's so interesting to go back and watch those shows where the face heel or hero villain dynamic, whatever you want to call it these days, Greg, was a little bit more genuine, we hated this guy because we loved how good he was at being a hateable guy. And Nigel McGuinness, for those of you who don't know, he brings an iron to the match, which is what he uses a lot of times to get disqualified when he gets in trouble. And in this case, Claudio manages with referees out of the picture, or so mm-hmm. it appears, at least, well, sorry, Sinclair was out of the picture. You thought that Paul Turner was out of the picture, but he saw Claudio waffle Nigel with the iron. So when Sinclair counted the three, we got the raising of the arms, and everybody knew what was going to happen.
You knew, yeah.
Everybody started chanting Dusty Finish because Paul Turner came in and took away the victory because he saw Claudio, and he was very demonstrative and like pointing to his eyes, like, "I saw the eye." Like, it was so.
Yeah,
it's funny. It was like he was trying to be like he was in an arena of like 50,000 people or something. So he had to be very demonstrative with his eyes. It's very theater.
It is, and it's sad. It's almost sad because that we thought that was going to be Claudio's moment, right? His mm-hmm. crowning achievement. When the match happened third, you kind of had to wonder, like, why is this match going on so early in the show?
Right.
And of course, now we know why, because Gabe Sapolsky booked a Dusty Finish. And I remember, like, the crowd chanting Dusty Finish was just one of those moments you don't really get in wrestling anymore. And
no, you know,
I remember
don't.
The first time ever going to Ring of Honor, it was like a combination of a Japanese crowd and an ECW crowd. And I miss those days. Even today, it's not like that at all. I mean, today, there's no fans. But even when there were fans, it just wasn't the same. And this crowd was one of, you know, it was just your typical ROH crowd. The things they chanted and everything they did was just so perfect. I mean, in another time, you know, things being different with contracts or whatever, Claudio would have, you know, probably had a run on top of Ring of Honor akin to Samoa Joe, Bryan Danielson, and Nigel McGuinness. Like, that's
right.
It's at the time, you know, he was the most money making man, and he was all.
He came out to Sledgehammer by Peter Gabriel, man. It was so great. And in a sense, though, he did get a top of Ring of Honor run in his heel run.
He did
with Chris Hero. And yeah, this is the other thing. One of the things I loved, you know, we talk about save tag team wrestling. Tag team wrestling mattered in Ring of Honor.
It did, but I don't want to go there yet.
Oh, okay.
This card is a pivotal turning point in tag team wrestling for Ring of Honor, or for tag team wrestling in Ring of Honor.
I know what you're getting at.
And so I want to wait and talk about that in a moment. So I don't mean to cut you off, but I really want to, you know, hashtag save it for later in the podcast, because that's such a great point that you'll be able to make, but it really does deserve its time and place for that. Next up on the card was, I believe, our first and maybe only time, at least first time, ever seeing Steve Corino live. And saw no,
but we
not,
drove
not
him
only.
In a van once.
Yeah, because we drove him in a van. He was the only person wearing a suit. I remember that at the Phoenix shows for Ring of Honor. Some 5 years later, now that I think about it, but
he was reading a newspaper.
Alex Shelley, of course, joined the Embassy, and he didn't sell out. Patrick O'Dowd, what did he do?
He bought in.
That's right. And he would come in, and he did it all. He did the Embassy. I mean, he was just. Alex Shelley, for me, I thought about this as I was thinking about this card today. I was always so excited to know that Alex Shelley was going to be on the card, but then it was always like a notch below what I thought it was going to be. And this is why people are going to kill me for this. Is he overrated? Is he one of the more overrated wrestlers in history?
I mean, I don't think so. If for no other reason than I love the Machine Guns like a lot, and love them as a team. I think, you know, what you just kind of described though is sometimes you have in your head like your hopes, and then what you get isn't exactly what you get, and so then that might color things a little bit differently. I'll tell you the thing that took the magic of Alex Shelley away for me a little bit. You know exactly what I'm talking about here. It might have been. I was going to use the restroom, and the showers were near the restroom. And this guy comes walking out of the showers, and he is shorter than I am. And I'm like, that's Alex Shelley. Wow, he's little.
Yep.
He can kick my ass, but he's so little.
Which is really funny because Alex Shelley is billed at 5'10".
He is not 5'10".
You and I are the same height. He is not 5'10".
That is not true, friends.
He's shorter than we are, and we are not 5'10". So Alex Shelley is definitely not 5'10". But that's what he's billed as, so whatever.
Well, and in this match, this is another one of those matches where it's kind of hard to be excited about this because you know his role in the match isn't about him. It's about Carino and what they're doing with Carino. And then eventually, you know, as you were mentioned, we get our return of Homicide at this point after the match where Homicide attacks Carino with is Ricky Reyes with him, or is this the one where it's just Smokes?
I think it's just Smokes.
So like, yeah, he and Julius Smokes are out there and they're trying to set up, Drano to dump down Steve Carino's throat. And of course, Colt Cabana comes to the rescue in a spot that, like, as I watch today, I'm like, man, I was so into that then. And today I'm like,
not so much.
I don't like that.
That was just because
I was so caught up in the moment. I didn't care. And obviously Colt Cabana is fine now because he's getting used on AEW. Apparently, I don't know what's going on there with him and his role there. But
the Dark Order.
But it was this big thing. So it was all about the post match. But Alex Shelley got the win over Carino, right?
A little roll up action, 10 or so minute match, and I mean it wasn't about even though the match like Carino is
it was fine.
Carino's Carino. Like they involved a chair in the match. They did everything. Like there was a lot.
I'll tell you what I was disappointed in. I was disappointed that we did not get a ring entrance announcement from Carino's personal announcer because we had to have Prince Nana and him get into it.
They pie-faced him
to start the match.
And we would see it on DVD
because you hype trained that for me. By the way, like that's the thing is you hype trained it. You were like, these are always really great. He's going to say something really funny. It's going to be about New Jersey because we're in New Jersey or something. And then we got nothing. We didn't get five things about New Jersey or anything. Right.
Do you remember the original? Do you remember who Steve Carino's first Ring of Honor ring announcer was?
No, I'm not even going to pretend to try. No, that's a Belaz question.
It was Bobby Cruz.
Really?
Yeah. Before Bobby Cruz was the ring announcer, Ring of Honor, he was Steve Carino's personal ring announcer. And then of course became, and I don't know who replaced him and I can't seem to find it. Who replaced him as Steve Carino's personal ring announcer. I actually think for the gimmick, the guy who replaced him was better. And the guy who replaced him did a damn good job. I was bummed. Kind of like you were bummed when you thought we weren't going to see Christopher Daniels at This Is War. I was bummed when we didn't get to see or hear Steve Carino's personal ring announcer. Although, to their credit, the crowd sure did pop when Nana pie-faced him. So...
Nana would do. Like it's in keeping with the character, so you can't fault it too much. By the way, little nugget that you don't get at the live show, but is one of my favorite parts of the DVD is that there is a segment with Carino fleeing the arena talking to Gary Michael Pettitte. It is clear that the show has been over for a while, or that like, it was either before the show started or after the show is over, but it's supposed to be like during the show, Carino's trying to escape out the back door, and he's freaking out about Drano being poured down people's throats, and we really need, I'm not coming back here until somebody gets this under control, blah, blah, blah. And it's funny, because Carino's funny in it. And yet at the same time, it does remind me of kind of like, you know, a 70s movie where the boom mic shows up in the back. She's like, come on, this isn't happening right now. Like, nobody's here. You can hear people talking about setting up or tearing down the ring in the background. Oh, yeah. Like, it's the whole thing. It's great.
It is great. You just don't see that stuff anymore. I miss those kind of things.
You sure don't. I do.
So I definitely do miss those. Next up, now things business picked up on this card. As we had the last match before intermission, it was a four-corner survival match between quite the names in Ring of Honor, of course. Samoa Joe, who at the time was the TNA X Division champion, Jay Lethal, Patrick O'Dowd's favorite wrestler of all time, the Fallen Angel Christopher Daniels, and the man who was responsible for a soundbite that I just love to play so much that I got to find, and I don't know where it is, so I got to try to find this soundbite, because of course I have far too many sound bites.
Watch out for Keith.
BJ Whitmer. Which is so funny, because that literally was born on this podcast many years ago when.
Yes, it was.
It was this big, huge announcement that BJ Whitmer was coming back to Ring of Honor. And we're like, and we used to call him Keith Whitmer because he was the most milquetoast, bland, vanilla.
Yeah, wrestler. Like, I'm happy for him. Like, I was happy for him, like, in the sense of, hey, you get to keep a job. And but, like, let's be real. Butts and seats.
Not BJ
Whitmer. People were being like, sign me up. Now he found, and really at this point, like, was this Lacey's Angels time? Was Lacey with him? What's that?
This was after Lacey's Angels.
Right.
I think Lacey might have managed him for this match, but that was coming to an end. Him and Jimmy Jacobs had already broken up.
It was him and Jimmy Jacobs, yeah.
Yeah.
Watch out for Keith.
Yeah, that's just the thing. It's like we sort of looked at this guy and we're like, yeah, it's like Keith is showing up, but he's just not intimidating or scary. No.
But he can go. Like, he could go.
Oh, yeah, he can go.
And the thing about BJ Whitmer was in ring, he's like 235 pounds, right? But in Ring of Honor, he's a big power dude. And he's got all kinds of fools he can throw around, and he's hitting exploders on everybody. He hits an exploder on Samoa Joe in this match that we just lost our shit over. And
he had that long hair back then. Like, it was like down to like the small of his back. And then when he then he shaved his head, like he cut it all off and went blonde later on.
Then he married Kelly
Klein. He was bald for a while.
Everything went crazy. So,
and that fell apart. Yeah, that wasn't good.
But this starts off because Jay Lethal had turned on Samoa Joe at the last Ring of Honor show. And Jay Lethal comes out, gets interviewed by Gary Michael Capetta, and basically says, which makes no sense whatsoever in hindsight, that he was upset because he saw Samoa Joe's paycheck and he was making more than Jay Lethal. Which makes no sense because he
should. Because Jay had been the pure champion before Joe.
Which he lost to Joe.
He lost to Joe. Which would have been a better way to get into this feud was like, instead of the mentor was making more than the mentee. But the best part of that promo, which you didn't even talk about, was the crowd chanting, Joe's going to kill you. What had happened previously to this match that Jay reminded the audience of at the show?
I don't remember.
I already beat him.
Oh, yes.
Or beat him. He's like, I beat him already. It's like, shut up. I beat him already. What do you want from me? And that was the new turn for Jay Lethal, where he was starting to steal victories.
Yep.
And this was a classic example where everybody and their brother has their finisher on my boy Daniels. And Jay Lethal steals the pin through the back door.
Because Joe hits the muscle buster on Daniels on the X Division Championship, but then BJ hits Joe with a chair, and then Lethal kicks BJ out of the ring, hits Whitmore a diving out of the ring on Christopher Daniels and picks up the victory. Hell of a match, too. Like, just a highly
entertaining,
you know, four-corner survival match. The four-corner survival match in Ring of Honor was interesting because it was definitely a way to protect people. Because it was a one fall situation. So, you know, you had Daniels taking the fall because Joe couldn't take the fall, but they didn't need Joe to win. You wanted Jay Lethal to win. Although it was kind of the beginning of the end for Jay Lethal. Like by February, he was gone. Like we went to the fifth anniversary show and he loses to Joe and then he's gone. So,
well, the other thing that was interesting, you talked about how it protects people. Four Corner Survival is a way that Gabe often was able to manage multiple angles as well, because the other, there was another angle that's going on there. And again, on the DVD, they play it out in some interviews and backstage promos, because Daniels and Joe had a long history in Ring of Honor. Right. Like Daniels brought Joe in, but Daniels had never gotten the pin on Joe in like a one-on-one match or anything like that. And after this match, Daniels does a backstage interview slash promo where he talks about being muscle busted on the X Division title and how this has gone too far. And in the beginning of 2006, when they start doing the anniversary stuff, Daniels and Joe have like three matches, one right after another, that eventually where Daniels finally gets his pin on Samoa Joe.
Well, he had pinned
before
Joe,
then losing two more times.
He pinned Joe in the four-way match where Punk lost the world title.
Right, right.
The elimination match. But that was not a one-on-one. He gets the one-on-one victory in the feud that you're talking about. Because you know Samoa Joe is susceptible to flash pins. So
he is, very much so.
That definitely,
gotta,
definitely
happened. Those inside cradles and roll-ups, you got to watch out for them.
So, which we saw multiple times happen in Samoa Joe's career.
Survival of the fittest, Joe.
Yep,
poor
that's
guy.
Where I think it was Aries that eliminated him there. Because Aries and Strong eliminate everybody and then fight each other. So, actually, it might have been Cabana. I don't know. I got to go back and watch it. I haven't seen that show.
I think it was Cabana.
It might have been. Cabana loves those roll-ups. So,
he
definitely loves the roll-ups.
He's a Matt classic.
Yes, he is a Matt classic. This match also features Christopher Daniels instructing Jay Lethal that it's time for the moonsault spot. And whenever you watch that DVD, like you hear it plain as day. But this is, and I read about an interview with Edge recently where Edge talked about he was wrestling somebody early in his career. And the guy was like, okay, we're going to go to this spot. And like Edge turns around and does it. And the guy's like, not yet. And that's the thing.
Right.
Like if you watch this match, Daniels calls for the moonsault spot, and then it takes several minutes before they actually get to the moonsault spot. And what's really funny is that it's like, you know, okay, it's time for the moonsault spot, and then you hear Daniels, come on, Jay, let's go. Like it's like he's literally, you know, he's the ring general. He's at the time, if you think about, okay, it's 2020 and he's a 50-year-old man. He was 35 at this point, probably easily the oldest person in that match. But just such a great thing. And that's back, you know, when they could bring out the X Division Championship. And, of course, it factors into the finish of the match because Lethal brought it into the ring. And then you know, they did it out. Of course, Lacey and Allison Danger had the little cat fight during
the
match.
Yes, they did.
Well, to let the guys rest a little bit, which is, you know, pop the crowd, of course. I used to love –
I mean, Allison Danger was in that nun outfit.
Right. I used to love Steve Corino, would always call her a slut on commentary, which is great since it's his sister, but that's just, you know, neither here nor there. Just a really good match that was highly entertaining. BJ, one of his, you know, was a hell of a star in this match. Like I said, did a lot of great stuff and just really, really delivered big time. Then we went to intermission. Of course, saw little Alex Shelley coming out of the shower and got to hang out a little bit and have some fun. Then we came back to, at the time, the top of the class trophy holder, Davey Andrews, going one-on-one with Ricky Reyes. The gimmick at the time was that Ricky Reyes was beating up students from the academy.
Trained by Austin Aries,
Austin Aries, of course, because Austin Aries was the head trainer at the time. And of
course,
kept
destroying the trophy.
Yes, destroys the trophy and – on the DVD, they don't even show this whole match. They show the beginning and the end only. Not that the match was very long. In fact, it probably seems longer on the DVD than it really was. Ricky Reyes beats Davey Andrews. What I didn't know about this until today was that 10 days later, Davey Andrews would retire from pro wrestling forever. And he was like the prized student that was going to be, you know.
I was going to ask, like, whatever happened to him? And I was like, you were either going to be like, you now know him as blah, 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 or he's done.
You now know him as, you know, the manager of your local Walmart. But he, I don't know what he does. But, yeah, he was like the prize student, and he would retire from the business and you know, hopefully went on to bigger and better things. And of course, this is actually where they cut to Steve Corino leaving the building that you were talking about. But this was really a whole thing done for Austin Aries to come out, which kind of stunk because then we didn't get the Aries intro with personal.
We got it many times later.
Yeah, we did. You're right. But he comes out and just destroys Ricky Reyes, like with personal shit about his drinking problem and everything. Yep. And so just rips into him completely. And then basically says, you know, and Roddy comes out too. He's like, well, we're here. Let's bring out the tag champs and have our match, which of course is the Ring of Honor World Tag Team title match. Tony Mameluke and Sal Rinaro defending said championships against the representing Generation Next, Austin Aries and Roderick Strong. Now, interesting. What I have as my reference is saying that Aries and Strong earned that match by beating Samoa Joe and Jay Lethal at a Night of Tribute. I thought they earned the match by winning Steel Cage Warfare against the Embassy, but apparently I'm wrong. So that's how I thought they earned it. But whatever. This is so Tony Mameluke and Sal Rinaro, of course, beat BJ Whitmer and Jimmy Jacobs to become Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions. Or maybe they beat the
It was them.
They didn't.
Funny story. Because they beat them at Joe versus Kobashi.
Oh, okay.
Which was the other show that I watched.
Yeah.
when we were talking about this randomly not too long ago.
Okay.
Because when they showed up, I was like, oh, is this when they did that? Is this when that happened?
Yeah.
Because I mean, let's be real. It was the transitional champs.
Oh, big time. Big time.
At its biggest definition.
Hell, it had 5 title defenses.
Right, which
never
in Ring of Honor
were they,
is still a transitional.
Never were they after intermission until this one, which is the point I wanted to make. Like this was, there's transitional champs, and then there's Tony Mameluke and Sal Rinaro. Like they weren't just transitional champs to get the belts to Aries. They were transitioning the titles from an undercard act to a main event act, and that's what I wanted to talk about here. Like, okay, Roderick Strong and Austin Aries win the match. Like, obviously, okay, we all knew that was going to happen.
It was a surprisingly sustained squash.
Yeah, it was like the longest extended squash ever. Like, it really was. Like, you just knew what was going to happen. You knew what you know. It was an 18-minute match that didn't need to be an 18-minute long match. It was literally an 18-minute ass kicking for Aries and Strong just to get all their shit in and show that they're a great tag team, which they were. But after this, I mean, tag team wrestling took off in Ring of Honor.
Yeah. Well, and you look at, because at the start of the next year, you get not right away in January, but we were there for it when the Briscoes come back. Mm-hmm. The,
at the fourth
the
anniversary
tag
show,
team,
the Briscoes came back.
Yep. The fourth anniversary show, the Briscoes come back. You're going to get the Kings of Wrestling are going to show up later in the year. It just became a legitimate thing, you know. And I remember, like, there was a period after this, like 06, 07, where it was every bit as hot as any other feud. Like, you look at, like, Owens and Generico and their chase after Jimmy Jacobs and Tyler Black / Seth Rollins, for all of you now. You look at, you know, people going after the Kings of Wrestling. It was just as important. And for a fan of tag team wrestling, like, was so excited when one of the Massachusetts shows that Ring of Honor did was the tag team tournament to crown new champions, mm-hmm. where everybody was certain that was going to be when Owens and Generico. It's not Owens. Yeah, Steen and Generico were going to finally win the tag titles. And they even did the hope spot. They even did the Generico gets taken out and has to come back from the back to try and save the day. And they still lost that match, which was great booking by Gabe when they finally did win that match in Boston. And I was there for that one too, because that was his big, I had so much fun at that show.
Yep.
Because I had seen them not get it, and then to see them get it, like being a part of that, was great.
But this match, I want to go back to this match because Mameluke and like we all knew what was going to happen. Like we all knew,
totally.
And it was okay that we all knew. Like that's the thing. Like it's imagine a show where every single person in the building knows what's going to happen, and every single person in the building wants it to happen. And right. everybody was just waiting, and everybody was okay waiting, and just watching Aries and Strong do their thing. One of my favorite moments is when, Roderick Strong goes in the corner, does his chops, tags in Austin Aries. And Roderick Strong, of course, at the time was known for chopping the hell out of people. Aries tags in and chops Mama Luke Renner, I don't know, and the crowd boos because this chop wasn't loud enough or whatever. So he tags, and poor Mama Luca Renaro. He tags Strong back in just so he
could
chop
it. Sal.
Was it Sal? Of course it was.
Sal. Poor Sal.
Poor Sal.
I mean, bless his heart. Like, he's still working today.
I think he still works for Impact Wrestling. Didn't we see him in Vegas?
I saw him on NWA.
Did
on
you?
On the studio show. On those, so I don't know if he's still working with them.
If he's working for NWA, he's not working for Impact Wrestling. I'll tell you that. No one works for both those companies. It's just not a thing.
No,
they hate each other.
But no, that Sal Renaro still he's different look now. He no longer has trunks that say "Saved by the Sal" in the "Saved by the Bell" letters. So bless his heart. He's moved forward there.
Yeah, it was just so good. So it was and they finally win, it's Strong with the backbreaker, Aries with the 450, and Generation Next becomes the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Championships. The second straight final battle where Austin Aries wins a world title, as he had the shocking win over Samoa Joe in 2004, winning the Ring of Honor World Championship there. This, of course, Dr. Steve Williams, Terry Gordy, referred to as the Miracle Violence Connection. The author of my reference here calls Sal Renaro and Tony Mameluke the Miracle Jobber Connection. So that is it, it kind of came from FIP, and that's how this did. But this put tag team wrestling in the main event for Ring of Honor. Hell, we talk about the two Phoenix, Arizona Ring of Honor shows. The first night was main evented by the American Wolves and the Briscoes. It's the famous match we talk about where Adam Pearce tells them to go home whenever they want to, and they wrestle for another like 30 minutes. And we joked with Adam Pearce the next day about what those guys did, and his response was, because they're stupid. So that's everything we needed to know about Adam Pearce in one interaction. But this is just a great example. Again, the finish is the foregone conclusion, but yet it was worth – kind of like when Kofi Kingston beat Bryan Danielson at WrestleMania 35. You knew – or Daniel Bryan. Right. Excuse me. I'm in Ring of Honor mode. You knew what was going to happen, but you were ready for it. You wanted it. You wanted it to build. You wanted everything. So that was it. Which brings us to the final two matches of the night. Maybe one of the best 1-2 punches of two main events ever. I don't know. Who knows? But the first one, of course, the Ring of Honor World Championship match, the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson, defending against Pro Wrestling Noah star, hadn't yet ascended to the mountaintop there, Naomichi Marufuji. And well, I want to talk about opinions on the match, because once we talk about the two final matches, then we can kind of talk about which one was better, because it's a fun little thing for you and I to talk about. But the great match between these two, just a game of one-upsmanship, and just trademark Bryan Danielson.
Right. The thing that I loved about this was you got to see some of those, like Bryan Danielson was really starting to adopt some of those like famous heelish tendencies that he would have later on throughout his run as the champ. Like, he would tease the surfboard and then not do it and do a knee stomp. He would get somebody into a corner or into the ropes and wait till the referee was at four, let him go and say, "I have till five, referee." And he would put five fingers up, and
there
people
was,
really got into that.
I don't know what match it was, but there was a match where he doesn't do that in WWE. He puts somebody there and the ref counts to four and Daniel Bryan breaks, and he's a heel at the time. And Corey Graves on commentary goes, "He has till five, referee." And Corey Graves is just so underrated. Whatever.
Like, people, he knows.
He knows.
He Lucky knows. Bastard. Anyway.
Oh my goodness. That was a very well placed comment by you.
Thank you.
Patrick O'Dowd.
I think comment. You described it so well.
B-U-L-O-U-S.
I was trying to get serious. I was trying to bring it back.
I had to do it for you.
You're like, nope, I'm just gonna play right over it.
Why not?
I appreciate, and it was an appreciation.
Of course.
So thank you for that. The one upsmanship thing was yeah, it was just like everything seems to be an attempt to top the other one. And, you know, and they start off just, you know, with slaps to the back of the head after putting each other in headlocks and things like that. And just the moves get bigger and bigger and bigger until you're at the end and you're like, you're out of your chair. Like I remember we stood up for half the match and half the next one.
Yeah. It was just so good. And it was really like, there were points in the match where you're like, okay, I'd be okay with Mayor Fuji winning. Like,
right.
And this was just really the beginning of Danielson's run. He'd won the belt in August and, you know, and of course he's working, you know, just a phenomenal wrestler, athlete, everything. And just so many good things, like a spinning toe hold that you don't see all the time. It's like Brian Daniel, like if you think Daniel Bryan is good, and he should, and you should, because he is.
Right, absolutely.
You need to go watch some of his matches from Ring of Honor when he was on his world title run, because he is amazing. He is legitimately one of the greatest wrestlers to ever step foot in a ring. And that is one of the greatest runs any individual has ever had.
And just to put it out there, and to bring back a name we've already talked about, his feud with Nigel McGuinness and the two of them, it's as good as anything you can possibly watch in a ring. They were so good.
When Ring of Honor was doing their pay-per-views where they would pre-tape them and kind of release them, and we went to Respect Is Earned 2. I don't remember the name of it, but there was one that they filmed somewhere. But then they, in like Philly or somewhere else, ran a match with Nigel McGuinness and Bryan Danielson, I think unannounced, or I don't even know. And they ended up using that on the pay-per-view broadcast. So the first like four matches were at one location. Then they went to this other match. And it was like super dark and smoky where the arena was, which, you know, is a look I love in wrestling. And those guys just beat the hell out of each other. Like, that match is one of the best. I need to find it and watch it, because that match is just insanely good. It ends up on the DVD of the original show. It was on like as a bonus match, but it's also on that pay-per-view. And just such a good match. And it's interesting because the review that I have in front of me for this basically says the first half of the match had no heat and Marufuchi seemed unmotivated. And I don't know that that's accurate.
I don't know that they were watching the match. I don't know. It's people that were there.
I think it was more the gimmick. Like, I think he was basically trying to pretend that Bryan Danielson wasn't in his league and that this was going to be an easy night's work for him.
Right. And throughout the match builds, like that's the other thing, is a good match shouldn't start off, or doesn't always necessarily need to start off with.
I was going
to
say, we can't say it shouldn't start off because there's the next match.
Right. But it was a story that was being told and there was a back and forth there, and they really built up the drama and pulled the crowd in as they sped things up. And it was a slow starting match, because they're feeling each other up or feeling each other out, not up.
That's different.
And right. And again, but it's one upsmanship. Like you know, they're chain wrestling and trying to show each other up. Then they start moving into some bigger moves and they start going for drop kicks and hurricane ranas and drop toe holds and back elbows and roaring elbows. And like, it just gets harder and faster all the way through. And by the end of that match, it's very dynamic, just in just very, not flippy shit, but it's very flashy in the way that it ends. And I use that word intentionally, knowing what we're going into in the next match.
Well, and it's flashy too, because it was the good old flash pin. You know, it was a big roll-up sequence that led to the finish of the match, where Danielson was able to hold him down, a 24-minute match. Just a great match, a great title defense for Bryan Danielson. And a lot of people thought that should have been the main event. It wasn't. The main event was, of course, Kenta defending the GHC Junior Heavyweight Championship against Loki in the one-on-one affair. Of course, this match had like the ceremonial reading of the decree that they do for Pro Wrestling Noah whenever a GHC championship is defended. I think you had people like presenting flowers. I mean, it was the whole big get up that they could do. and it was Kenta, and it was versus and Loki, and we're highly critical of Loki, like we just are, like
right.
all the time, and deservedly so, because he buys into his own hype. Like there's no bigger fan of Loki in this world than Loki. That's why you don't see him much anymore. But this is probably the best Loki match I've ever seen in my life, and that includes all the stuff he did in TNA during the first run. So it's I mean he just. These two guys, and this was our first experience seeing Kenta. I don't think either of us had ever seen him, but we'd heard about the guy. And I mean, these dudes just from the beginning, like they locked up, and then within 10 seconds, Loki's hanging over the rope in an armbar with Kenta trying to finish the match. And like these guys just beat the hell out of each other.
This was as stiff a match as I've, like, this wasn't snug. Like, this was stiff. This was so like you were kidding. And the first round of kicks, like took the wind out of my lungs. Like I can't imagine how Key felt taking that kick. And then he gives as good as he gets. Like the two of them really do kick the crap out of each other. For me, it's the Falcon Arrow off the top.
Yep, that I was gonna say
every time like that spot had that. Pulled again out of the chair, like it just.
Yeah, Seth Rollins would steal that spot, you know, 18 years later. But that was because it's not just a Falcon Arrow off top rope. Like he jumps up to the top rope and then immediately hits the Falcon Arrow. Like these two guys were brilliant performers, and it's insane because Kenta, I don't know, I think. I think his career he'll go down as like didn't ascend to the heights he should have ascended to. And probably the same with Loki.
At least in the WWE.
Everywhere. Like he's never been the top guy. But in ring, he's got the talent to be the top. But now he's been marred by injuries. If you look at him physically, how he looks in this match and look at how he looks now, he looks nothing like that. Like the dude was jacked and was just an insane talent. And it's just such a good match. These guys just, like I said, beat the hell out of each other and just everything they could do. Kenta, famous for the go to sleep. And of course, in which CM Punk would later steal. And then Kenta, remember when he couldn't use it in NXT for a while and then he would tease it and drop out of it. And then he finally does use it and everybody pops. That wasn't even the finish back then. Like that was a setup.
That was the lead kick to the knee.
Yeah. Which he hit and just completely creams Loki with, and that's the finish. And it was just, it's funny too because you're talking about a match that's damn near 30 minutes, and it flew by. And I remember this is one of those matches that I'm watching and thinking I don't want this match to end because I don't know where we could ever go from here. Like this might just be it. And here's the thing, like it nowadays people might watch and think it's a little spotty, a little too much. This is the difference between seeing a match live and seeing a match on TV or on DVD or whatever.
1,000%.
This is live. It's kind of like Joe versus Kobashi, right? Like that match.
Like I mean, I'm sure if we had been there.
Yeah, we'd love it. We'd talk about how great it is and all that. To their credit, the guys who wrote this article both end it with their top 10 matches for Ring of Honor 2015. And it comes in number 4 on the list for both of them. So that,
So it's definitely up there.
Joe versus Kobashi, by the way, comes in number 2 for both of them. The number 1 match for both of them was actually the Bryan Danielson Roderick Strong match that we saw live at This Means War, which was that classic. That
it was a great match. It was a great match.
Armbar. But this match just, I mean, we're sitting there and we're chanting 5-star match and all the other indie bullshit that people do. But this was just, and it's these two matches that, there's a lot of great things about this show. I mean, the Claudio versus Nigel match, and you've got the four-way, and you've got, Aries and Strong winning the tag titles. But if not for Bryan Danielson defending against Naomi Chimera Fuji and Kenta defending against Loki, we wouldn't call this the greatest night in the history of our sport.
No, not at all. Like, the adrenaline that those two matches pumped into our collective veins got us back to Storrs, Connecticut relatively awake. Like, I'm always kind of amped after a wrestling show, like even a crappy wrestling show, I'm always kind of amped up. like just jitters, like just so crazy intense, you know, while we stopped at the McDonald's on the New Jersey Turnpike or whatever it was. I'm just making it up.
I think it was.
It was, you know, to just think that it was so euphoric. It was so crazy. And it made the whole, you know, I joked at the very beginning about, oh, you know, I was the paranoid guy. It didn't matter what happened when we got home.
No.
It was so it was worth it. It was worth the $20 we spent to see it because that was back when ROH was more affordable.
Yeah.
And I think we only paid $20 for our second row seats.
I think this one, we were like the fifth row.
Were we that far back?
I think we were a little further back.
I do know that you can see the top of our heads.
Yeah.
Because we're on the hard camera side. I think we're closer than you think. I think we might have been third row.
Maybe.
Like before we kind of got onto the game that you could just go buy tickets for the next event at the current event.
From a seat at the table.
Right. I don't think they do that anymore.
No, now you got to be part of the honor club and pay like $100 for tickets. But yeah.
Right. Not doing that.
No. So here's my question.
The good old days.
For you. And this is where I love having this conversation. Low-key versus Kenta or Brian Danielson versus Mary Fuji? Which one's better?
Which is better? I mean, it's not a fair question, but it's a fair question, but honestly, it depends on the day.
Yeah.
And in my most recent rewatch, like Low-key Kenta was the one that I walked away from happier with. Like
you
just rewatching it a couple of days ago.
Mary Fuji.
Oh, I was very much.
And Mary I was Low-key Kenta. And
right.
Although I loved Mara Fuji after their match, like I loved all four guys and we would get Kenta, Joe and Danielson later, which is just phenomenal stuff. And
right.
And just so many, you know, good combinations of all those guys. And I think we got Kenta and Kobashi on a Ring of Honor show at one point. Which of course
it was a tag, right? Like they were
maybe. Yeah, I think they went one on one at one point too, which of course Kobashi goes over because it's Kobashi.
Right.
He had to go over. I mean, he beat Samojo in 9 minutes with an elbow. So it's what they do.
There were some suplexes.
There were a few suplexes. There were a couple of them. Lots.
Go back and rewatch the match, Greg.
Suplex City. I know. No, I agree.
It's still overrated, but it's
still good.
There's more to there's more to it
than an elbow. Oh, I know.
Greg DeMarco burying Yoko. It would not be my number two match of 2005.
Right.
In Ring of Honor.
Yeah, no.
Like
I mean, we'd probably
the crowd, as you say, the crowd makes that match.
It does, and it should, and it definitely should. Like that's just what they do and where they're at. But this was for me, it was Low-key Kenta and all of that. So you know. Match of the night can be Low-key versus Kenta, can be Brian Danielson versus Naomichi Marufuji. What's your favorite match of the night, though?
My favorite match of the night? Honestly, if I were looking at the show as a whole, funny story, it's Nigel and Claudio.
Yeah. Yeah, favorite match of the night.
Because it's the story.
Yeah.
It's the story. Like it's totally the story behind the match. Like that's what makes it stand out. Like that's what I remember more details from that match than any of the other matches we talked about. Like I even did it on the show. Like that's what comes away with it. Like I acted out. Like you all can't see this because we don't stream our video. I acted out Paul Turner.
Yeah, you did. You did. You pointed to your eyes. You did everything. Yep. You definitely did. For me, it's Aries and Strong versus the Miracle Jobber Violence Connection or whatever. Just because we just knew what was going to happen. And it was just like, you know, it's like Christmas morning. You already know what presents you're getting, but you can't wait to open them. Like that's what that match was. Like you just loved every second of it and they delivered on it and you got your moment. They won the tag team titles and tag team wrestling became a major thing for Ring of Honor after that. And we were all there for it. We were all excited. And they just beat the crap out of those guys for 20 minutes. And I mean, they had their moments too. The heels did, but not like, or the whatever they were. But
they weren't really heels. Nah, like, it was weird. Like, Tony Mamaluk kind of acted a little heelish for a while. At the end, nobody cared.
No, nobody cared. It was all about Aries and Strong. And it should have been.
Right.
And it was. And it was just great. So we've got all those items. So last thing I'll ask you, favorite moment of the night.
Favorite moment of the night? Oh, it's the toilet paper.
Yep, me too.
It's the toilet paper. It's hilarious.
Because it was just, we knew we had toilet paper. We threw toilet paper. But seeing the volume of toilet paper was still
just so much.
Like so much toilet paper.
See, I thought you were going to talk. You were going to ask me what like the most memorable ROH moment was, and that was going to be a different answer.
Like from the show or just overall?
Just like overall, like of all the shows, because we've been to so many.
But yours is probably Steen and Generico winning the tag team titles.
Honestly, it's not.
No.
Though it's number two. It's Joe showing up to save the day against Necro Butcher.
Okay.
During that feud. And I'm trying to remember the circumstance. Or not Joe.
Homicide.
It's the chair ride one. Homicide. Yeah. Homicide shows up.
Because Joe couldn't wrestle. So Joe and Necro Butcher start off, and then Joe immediately powders out. You get the big brawl with Adam Pearce and BJ Whitmer and the CCW guys. And then here comes Homicide.
And then you're like, whose side's he on?
Right. And then he beats and then him and Necro Butcher fight. And then Homicide throws a chair in the ring and says, fuck it.
Let's get this motherfucker.
And then
I don't throw a chair.
No, we threw your chair and the little kid next to you. And yeah, it was just.
It was you who threw the chair, unless you're the little kid next to me, ass face.
Which I can't. No, the kid was in front of us, I think. But yeah.
And then we ducked.
But then we also took advantage of the opportunity to be in the front row, pounding on the boards.
Right.
Because that's what you do back then. But yeah, we did get to be a part of a chair riot. And that's something that will never be taken away from us. But
number two is Steen and Generico.
Okay.
Like easily. And it's probably one and one A if you wanted to really parse it.
There is the Eric Stevens, Roderick Strong fight without honor with a ladder almost falls on us. That was one.
Where Eric Stevens almost dies.
Yeah.
Like Eric Stevens, by the scared, way, just scared announced for his Eric
third
Stevens.
Retirement from wrestling. So.
Yes, I noticed that.
And this one's
he looks cool. So different now.
Yeah, well, he lost all the weight. He was skinny.
Yeah, he is.
So
he was so jacked with the mohawk,
but it didn't work. But he's not. No. He used to be bitter. He's not bitter anymore. He's happy. So he got to go out on the terms this time. So good for him. But that is it. So if you've never seen it, go back, find a way, watch Ring of Honor Final Battle 2005. Highest recommendation from Greg DeMarco and Patrick O'Dowd. One hell of a show. One that we got to be there live. We've both seen it on DVD countless times. Patrick's probably seen it four times as many times as I have, if not more. But it is a classic in every sense of the word. We could ramble off. I mean, of the nine matches on this card, we can probably ramble off. There's probably a good six that would hold up no matter what. And that's
just
part of it. And, of course, a hell of a moment with Aries and Strong, immediately followed by just one of the best double main events you can find anywhere. If you think about it, those matches were each almost 30 minutes long. Plus you got the intros, plus you got the post-match shenanigans. That was almost an hour and a half of the night. This card started at 7 p.m. We didn't get out of the building till like 12:30.
Yeah,
it was a five and a half hour long show. And I didn't want it to end. Like, that's the crazy thing about it. Like, the show goes 5.5 hours and you don't want it to end. That's a mark of a wrestling show. And to me, short of the weekend that we worked for the company, might be the peak of Ring of Honor and live and whatever. Just such a great night. And that's why we call it the greatest night in the history of our sport.
In the history of our sport.
Because that's what it is. And yeah, it'll always be that. It'll always be something to remember and something that we're always going to have. So Ring of Honor Final Battle 2005. Go watch it. The greatest night in the history of our sport.
8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. LuchaDashMask.com by Pro Wrestling Revolution. Bringing you in partnership with Mask Republic,
back from her.
The Lucha Brothers, as well as Japanese legend Ultimo Dragon. Go to lucha-masks.com and fight Lucha Strong with masks from your favorite Lucha Legends and Pro Wrestling Revolution luchadores. Stay safe in style and represent your favorite luchador. Get yours now at lucha-masks.com, powered by Pro Wrestling Revolution.
This is your boy Kenny Killer telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Gentlemen, you have 3 minutes, and you better make it good.
We got 3 minutes, and we're out of here. The clock is ticking, and we're in the clear. We got 3 minutes, and we're out of here. We got 3 minutes, and we're out.
I don't even have a three-minute warning. We're already 90 minutes into the program, and it was a damn good time, a damn good stroll down memory lane. You know, it's Ring of Honor's not the same company it once was before, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think this return for Ring of Honor has been very entertaining, as I've been watching, it's available for free on Fight TV and been able to watch Ring of Honor and reviewing it for the Chair Shot, which I don't do a lot of reviews, so that's fun as well. And of course, there's Jay Lethal front and center and is still part of that. And I've come to love seeing Jonathan Gresham wrestle now, which is something that is more new to me. And just a lot of really good action involved in the current Ring of Honor product. And the non-wrestling stuff is way too goofy for me. It's just weird. It's like it's on another planet in another time. Like, it's just strange. But once that bell rings, it's highly entertaining stuff. And I think they're doing a great job with it. But definitely recommend that. Also recommend Final Battle 2005. Patrick O'Dowd on the Twitter at Wrestling Realist. WrestlingRealist. We talked about it a little bit already, but let the people know what's in store for them if they haven't already listened to this week's edition of your show, Bandwagon Nerds.
Like I said, we had a supersized panel to cover the season finale of The Boys Season 2. I had a lot of fun with PC Tunney, Chris Platt, and Ray Cash, along with Dave. And in the second half of the show, we did an interview with a guy named Tim Carlson, who is the owner of a business called Staff and Branch. Talked a little Dungeons and Dragons, got into the gamer side of nerddom for a change. We haven't done that in a while, so that was a nice little change of pace after what we've been doing for months now. It seems like,
I gotta say, like we've talked about it before, but the doing a show review 1 week at a time, just so much better than doing the massive
1,000. It's so much easier when the company that puts the show out does it 1 week at a time. Yes, as well.
That's true.
But it's, and these, I don't know if there's no way we could have done the season justice on any level if we had tried to do the mass upload thing. 'Cause there's like the last three episodes of The Boys are so dense, which is why it takes so long to go through that panel, really. There's just so much to cover and talk about.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree 100%. So, what's the movie this week?
The movie this week, because it's playoff baseball season, we're going back to our childhood and reviewing the 90s classic, The Sandlot.
There you go. Very cool. So that'll be available later this week over at thechairshot.com. No hashtag Miranda Show to preview this week. You can go follow Miranda Morales on the Instagram at the hashtag Miranda. Lots of great stuff still coming out over at thechairshot.com. I should have another Ring of Honor review out here in the next couple of days. Hopefully we'll get another pod, as war schedules have been really crazy for those guys over the past couple of weeks. Women's Wrestling Talk will be available for you tomorrow. Just a lot of great stuff over at thechairshot.com. So go check it out. Go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Pick up your very own Chair Shot t-shirt. I think it was 27 designs currently available over there at the show. If you're local, November 21st over at the Sun Studios of Arizona, NAV 30, presented by Impact Zone Wrestling as we celebrate 30 years of the impact and influence of the Navajo Warrior. Of course, every time I say that, I follow it up with the caveat, no, this is not a retirement show. He's still going strong, but we will celebrate 30 years of the Navajo Warrior. Get your tickets while you still can over at IZWWrestling.com. When this comes out, Wednesday should be the day that the first match or two are announced for NAV 30. So definitely check that out as well over on social media at IZWWrestlingAZ. You can find me on your social media at Chairshot Greg. The website is thechairshot.com.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Follow that at Chairshot Media on all your forms of social media. And if you want something a little non-wrestling, of course, head on over to ndcq.com. Pick up your Not Dead, Can't Quit apparel. reminders. Use that promo code DeMarco. Save 30%. That's more than just the shipping and the tax. Like, you'll actually save money on your stuff. And that's what's important. So do all of that. And hey, next week, we should actually have a normal show. We're going to sit down and go over the five major male champions in professional wrestling and talk about just kind of, are they the best champions for those companies? Are they the best champions for those titles right now? And just kind of go over what we're looking at and what we think. Real quick, Patrick O'Dowd, Monday Night Raw, we saw the Street Profits get drafted to SmackDown as the Raw Tag Team Champions. We, of course, on Friday Night SmackDown, New Day beats Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro to become the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. So on Raw, they just simply traded the belts. And so you being the tag team wrestling guy that you are, the hashtag save tag team wrestling, thoughts on the hashtag belt swap that took place on Raw?
I mean, it tells you everything you need to know about how valuable the tag titles are in the WWE. And at least in the sense of, I mean, if it's as easy as swapping the branded titles, why do you have two titles? Make it one and have the tag champs move about, because it's dumb. I hate it. It's, you know me, I just hate it.
There's people that hated it. So I've seen people talk about WCW in 2000. I'll be honest with you. I didn't hate it, just because, first of all, it's you know what you're watching. It's WWE. And
sure,
I feel like it was just the simplest way. Right. Just keep it simple.
Right. I mean, it doesn't make them not champions. Right. And it's just,
no,
now, what's so, interesting, it's just so arbitrary.
They're counting like that, them I guess, as that's new reigns, supposedly. So now the New Day are 10 time tag team champions. That's interesting to me. It's
okay,
you know, but to me, it's just like they're props, especially in WWE. Right. They're props. This is what they did with the props. It's new. It hasn't been done before, so we give them credit for doing something like that. It's really funny. So back in the 90s, it was actually part of the build to WrestleMania 2000 as we're coming out of the Attitude Era. When the New Age Outlaws were wrestling as singles wrestlers, Billy Gunn was the hardcore champion, and the Road Dogg was the Intercontinental champion. And there was some moment they had in the ring in the build-up to WrestleMania 2000, which just eventually ended up just being called WrestleMania, no number, no year, no nothing, where Road Dogg offered to trade belts with Billy Gunn because everyone wanted Billy Gunn to be the Intercontinental champion, Road Dogg to be the hardcore champion. And people were mad that it didn't happen because that's funny. Just what they wanted to see. So it's just the fickleness of wrestling fans.
Yeah.
You're talking about something that's, you know, 20 years later at this point, but I think people are overreacting a little bit too, because that's what we do in the world of professional wrestling.
I thought they still had the red ass over the New Day breaking up.
I don't think the New Day are broken up. I think the story is, first of all, it's going to be an opportunity for a faction to exist, able to exist across multiple brands and show that they can't be broken up and they won't be broken up. I think it's, could be a story for next year's draft to try to get them back together. It could be a story to try to negotiate some kind of trade, or it could be a story with Big E winning the Royal Rumble. And look,
that was my thing. It was like, maybe this is Big E's big single shot that everybody's hoping for.
And if Big E wins the Royal Rumble, you're really going to be that mad that they have the New Day on separate brands?
Right.
But they're not breaking up the New Day. They might be splitting up the New Day. Now, it was great when Stephanie read off, you know, the draft picks, and she was like, the New Day, Kofi Kingston, Xavier Woods. And they're like, you didn't say Big E's name. Say Big E's name. Say Big E's name. And I honestly think, and it's just the way the draft works, because it goes Raw, SmackDown, Raw, SmackDown, Raw. I think it would have been better if they announced Big E first, because it's almost like SmackDown picked because Raw didn't take Big E or whatever. And I think, you know, it would have put Big E over a little bit if SmackDown took Big E and then Raw took whatever. But I also hate how they do this draft. So that's, you know.
Yeah,
that's,
I don't like it either.
My favorite draft, I don't remember the year, I think it's 2004, was when they did it over like 5 weeks, and each week one new person showed up on Raw or SmackDown, and it was a huge moment every time. And then I still remember
Chris Jericho bringing in John Cena one year during their draft, and that fucking place went nuts.
And then SmackDown had no world champion, spent weeks getting ready to crown a new world champion, and then right before it happened, canceled it all out because they just got Batista. And so it was, you know, it was just a great bit of storytelling, and And I just, I hate this. We do this big giant draft and not everybody changes, but they're just, they want it to feel like the NFL draft and it just can't. So,
well, and if you're going to do that, then you at least have to, as we go well past our 3 minute warning, if you're going to do that, this is the thing that bothered me is you could have Stephanie McMahon play the commissioner role announcing the draft picks, but give me a Raw war room and give me a SmackDown war room.
Which they did the
first time. Like it looks, yeah, so that you have that look of like each brand trying to do the best for the brand, like out of the pool.
Well, now the war room would not go over very well right now in the COVID era. So
I get you. You still, so have a fucking Zoom call set up or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Put that on the screen.
But do something to where it looks like people are taking calls or doing whether Adam Pearce could be one and whoever. Mm-hmm. You know, you fucking have Bruce Pritchard be the guy. Like, yeah. It doesn't matter. Just have somebody there so that it looks like each brand's trying to do something. With Stephanie McMahon just announcing them, it felt weird.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. It would have been a good opportunity to rebrand the tag team titles too. Either as a Universal and a WWE or as a Raw and a SmackDown, you know, stick with that and start rebranding the other titles as Raw and SmackDown titles. Cause it's just weird that we have some Raw and SmackDown titles and some World and WWE and some, you know, whatever, but it is,
it's a hodgepodge.
It is what it is, but you know, it's WWE. So it does not matter. That is going to do it for this week's edition of the Greg DeMarco Show. The 3 minute warning that we weren't going to have, we ended up having. So I guess you're welcome. You got some additional wrestling talk outside of the greatest night in the history of our sport. Again, go follow Patrick O'Dowd at Wrestling Realist, WrestlingRealist. You can find me at Chairshot Greg. And tune in next week for the Greg DeMarco Show. But until then, for Patrick, even for Miranda, who has only been present via text message during this show, we remind you to always use your head.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Nice try, though.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.